Hello, this is Tamara with the Decatur Herald and Review. It's Wednesday, January 14th. Let's begin today's reading on the front page. Our first article is Public Safety, Mayor, Watch Out for Kids. And we have a photo of Chief of Police Brad Allen and Mayor Julie Moore Wolf answering questions during a press conference on community safety at the Decatur Police Department on Monday, January 12th. This article is from Tony Reed in Decatur. Stats show progress, but recent shootings spark concern. Anyone with information about a violent crime can contact the Decatur Police Department's Criminal Investigations Division at 217-424-2734 or Crime Stoppers at 217-423-8477. Violent crime statistics in Decatur are trending down, but a spike in both shootings and the body count of victims toward the end of last year and the dawning of 2026 prompted city leaders to issue a plea to the public on Monday, "Help us save lives." Mayor Julie Wolf and Decatur Police Chief Brad Allen made that appeal in front of an audience that included church and community leaders who pledged to offer their support. But Moore Wolf said the people she was most interested in recruiting to the cause weren't present, the friends, family, and particularly parents of those future, often younger criminals who will use guns to take lives. "I say friends and family because a 19-year-old kid doesn't just wake up one day and decide to go buy a gun and start shooting people," Moore Wolf said. "This all starts at a much, much younger age, so I'm calling on parents to do your job. You need to know what your kids are doing. You need to know who they're running with, and if they're running with the wrong kids, stop them. And if they've already gotten their hands on weapons, find out and take them away. You need to do your job." The raw numbers show 9 homicides in 2025, 7 victims killed by gunfire, 2 by stabbings. But most of the killings happened in the last 3 months of the year. And with 2 shooting deaths already less than a month into 2026, Chief Allen said the concentration of violence had caught the public's attention. "Any loss of life is unacceptable," Allen said, speaking at a news conference hosted at police headquarters. "I want to be clear from the outset that we take every incident seriously and we understand the concern and the fear that this has created in our community." Allen noted, however, that it was important to realize the nature of much of the gun violence plaguing the city. "What we're currently dealing with is a concentrated spike in violence driven largely by known individuals and groups, not random acts against the public," the chief said. "That distinction matters to me. Not to excuse the violence, but to explain how we're responding to it." He said that response took the form of stepped-up patrols and targeted actions aimed at getting known criminals and their weapons off the streets. "In 2025 alone, we seized 312 illegal firearms from our streets," Allen noted. "Each one of those guns represents a potential act of violence that never occurred. It reflects the proactive enforcement, the strong investigative work, and the officers' commitments to reducing harm before it happens." He also pointed out some of the other fruits of that police work in the last 5 years. In 2021, for example, there were 179 shooting incidents of all kinds in the city. The total in 2025 was down to 92, an almost 50% reduction. Allen said the mayor's plea for greater parental and societal involvement in building a better community will help to keep those numbers trending downward. "Be engaged," he said. "And know what is happening with your children. Let me repeat that again. Know what is happening with your children. And for a third time, know what is happening with your children and your neighbors, your neighborhood, and your community. Early intervention matters. Conflicts often escalate long before shots are fired." He urged residents to support everything from violence prevention efforts to community organizations, faith groups, and mentorship programs, and he said that while the police will continue to do all that they can, the reality of the situation is that the community cannot arrest our way out of every problem. Vladimir Talley, a former police chief himself, and now safety and security administrator for Decatur Public Schools, was in the audience Monday and liked what he was hearing from Allen. "I wholeheartedly support what he is saying and what he is doing," Talley added. He also described himself as a firm supporter of the Second Amendment and gun rights, but said there was room for sensible rules deciding who has access to firearms and keeping them away from young children. We still have to do something about maintaining some controls over gun accessibility, to the point where people are held accountable for locking up their firearms, he said. Another of Monday's invited guests was Melverta Wilkins, who founded Sista Girls and Friends, an organization working to improve the lives and opportunities for girls and young women. She said solving the problem of gun violence and violence of all kinds will take everybody, from all walks of society, pulling together. Wilkins likened shootings to the outbreak of an epidemic, a health crisis attacking the community and requiring a community-wide response from the police and organizations like her own. We have to keep working, and if we try something and it doesn't work out, let's try something else. But we can't give up. We've got a beautiful community, and I love it here. Failure is not an option. Now from Brendan Moore in Springfield, Capital News, Illinois. Immigration, Illinois. Suit. Trump causing turmoil. Chicago state leaders blast-fed occupation. Illinois and Chicago sued the Trump administration Monday, seeking to severely limit immigration agents' authority in the state after accusing the feds of unleashing an organized bombardment to coerce state and local officials to change their immigration policies. State and city leaders want to end the feds' roving patrol policy of interrogating people they encounter on the street about their citizenship and immigration status without any probable cause. They're also seeking to limit crowd control tactics such as using tear gas to disperse nonviolent crowds and to prevent the feds from scanning the biometric information of state residents. Border Patrol agents and ICE Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers have acted as occupiers rather than officers of the law, Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul said in a statement. They randomly and often violently question residents. Without warrants or probable cause, they brutally detain citizens and non-citizens alike. They use tear gas and other chemical weapons against bystanders, injuring dozens, including children, the elderly, and local police officers. Raoul, along with the City of Chicago, filed the 103-page lawsuit in the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Illinois. It accused the federal government of applying pressure over policy differences through means such as withholding federal funds, attempting to deploy the National Guard, and most disruptively, executing an immigration enforcement operation described by state officials as causing turmoil and imposing a climate of fear. It also seeks to prevent immigration enforcement at sensitive locations without appropriate reasoning, including courthouses, schools, social service organizations, and medical facilities. And it seeks to bar immigration agents from trespassing on private property to make arrests in violation of the Fourth Amendment. The suit argues immigration agents only have the authority to do so within 25 miles of a U.S. border to prevent illegal entry to the country. The state is asking the court to find that the federal government's menacing, violent, and unlawful incursion violates the 10th Amendment, and to order federal agents to stop using tactics that exceed their statutory authority. Governor J.B. Pritzker released a statement in support of the lawsuit, writing that in the face of the Trump administration's cruelty and intimidation, Illinois is standing up against the attacks on our people. Today, Illinois is once again taking Donald Trump to court to hold his administration accountable for their unlawful tactics, unnecessary escalations, and flagrant abuses of power, Pritzker said. The lawsuit names, among others, Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem, Immigration and Customs Enforcement Director Todd Lyons, and Border Patrol Commander Gregory Bovino, the public face of DHS's Operation Midway Blitz immigration enforcement campaign, as defendants. Much of the lawsuit pulls from claims brought in an earlier suit by media organizations and protesters who challenged the Fed's use of force tactics. The plaintiffs motioned for the case to be reassigned to the same judge in that challenge, U.S. District Judge Sarah Ellis, according to reporting by the Chicago Tribune and Sun-Times. Previously, she issued an injunction against use of force in that case, but the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals later stayed it. DHS spokeswoman Tricia McLaughlin told Capital News Illinois in a statement the latest suit was baseless. The fact is that sanctuary politicians in Illinois and Chicago released violent criminals, including murderers, rapists, drug dealers, pedophiles, gang members, and terrorists, onto its streets, and their dereliction of duty cost lives. Just ask Katie Abraham's father, McLaughlin said, referring to a 20-year-old Glenview woman who was killed in a hit-and-run crash last year, allegedly by a Guatemalan in the country without legal authorization. This is a baseless lawsuit, and we look forward to proving that in court. Minnesota, along with the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, filed a similar lawsuit Monday, seeking to block a surge of immigration enforcement in that state. It comes less than a week after an ICE agent shot 37-year-old American citizen Renee Nicole Good at close range while she was apparently attempting to flee a traffic stop. The Illinois lawsuit claims that Midway Blitz is part of a campaign of coercion by the Trump administration attempting to force state and local governments, including Illinois and the city of Chicago, to change their sanctuary immigration policies. The state's Trust Act, signed by then-Governor Bruce Rauner in 2017, generally prohibits state and local law enforcement from assisting the federal government with immigration enforcement unless a federal criminal warrant is presented. Chicago has had sanctuary city status since 1985. The state and federal policies are meant to foster trust between immigrant communities and law enforcement by ensuring that interactions do not result in immigration detention or deportation. But these policies, which predominate in the nation's blue states and blue cities, have been the target of ire from the Trump administration, which has accused state and local jurisdictions of impeding their mass deportation goals. Trump sued Illinois, Chicago, and Cook County last year, seeking to invalidate the state and local policies. But the challenge was dismissed by a federal judge in July, who found that they were protected under the 10th Amendment. Just 6 weeks after losing in court, DHS began its sweeping immigration enforcement campaign targeting the Chicago region. The department claims that it has resulted in the arrests of more than 4,500 immigrants in the country without legal authorization. But the raids often led to violent confrontations between masked federal agents and protesters during various operations in the city and suburbs, including near an Immigration and Customs Enforcement processing facility in suburban Broadview. Confrontations initiated by immigration officers resulted in two shootings, including one with deadly consequences during the height of Midway Blitz. An ICE agent shot and killed Silverio Villegas Gonzalez in Franklin Park in September after he attempted to flee a traffic stop. In October, a federal agent shot Marimar Martinez 5 times in Chicago's Brighton Park neighborhood. She survived, and the U.S. Attorney's Office in Chicago has dropped all charges against her. Characterizing it as a federal occupation of a sovereign state, the suit accuses the feds of sending armed immigration agents to roam city streets to question people about their citizenship status, capture and retain biometric data without consent, arrest people without a warrant or probable cause, and deploy tear gas and other chemical agents in residential neighborhoods and trespass on private property, all while concealing their identities with face masks and covering up license plates. The suit includes a laundry list of documentation, alleging, for instance, that federal agents deployed tear gas and other chemicals without warning at least 49 times in 18 separate incidents in Chicago over a 90-day period in 2025. And following the launch of a plate watch hotline in late October, at least 35 distinct license plates were reported being swapped or used on more than one federal vehicle operated by Border Patrol or ICE, according to the Illinois Secretary of State's office, which sent a cease and desist letter to DHS in October over the practice. While Midway Blitz has wound down in recent weeks, federal officials have been teasing a return with even larger numbers of agents in March. The filing includes Bovino stating, "Don't call it a comeback, we're going to be here for years." The state is asking the court to bar Border Patrol agents from conducting civil immigration enforcement in Illinois, arguing that they are not authorized or trained for large-scale removal enforcement in the interior of the United States. It's also asking a judge to declare that tactics such as roving patrols, warrantless arrests, deploying tear gas, and swapping plates, at least in this context, are in violation of federal law. The plaintiffs want those tactics barred in the future. The lawsuit is just the latest in a litany of litigation between the state and federal government. Raul has filed or joined in more than 4 dozen lawsuits against the Trump administration over the past year, challenging everything from cuts to congressionally appropriated state funding to Trump's now-aborted push to deploy National Guard troops to Chicago over the strenuous objections of Illinois' elected leaders. Actions like those, Raul alleged in the latest lawsuit, are part of the Trump administration's coercion campaign. The U.S. Supreme Court last month denied an emergency appeal from the Trump administration seeking to lift a temporary restraining order put in place by a lower court preventing the deployment of troops in Illinois. The underlying case is still working through the courts, though Trump last month dropped plans to deploy troops to American cities. The federal government filed a lawsuit earlier this month challenging a new state law that allows Illinois residents to sue federal immigration agents who arrest them in or near courthouses, or if they believe their constitutional rights were violated. Like the latest lawsuit, the case largely rests on the 10th Amendment. From Capital News Illinois, Maggie Dougherty. Healthcare. Maternal mortality up, racially divided. Preventable pregnancy-related deaths rose, and stark racial disparities remain in the Illinois Department of Public Health's most recent maternal mortality report. The report studied 219 deaths that occurred in Illinois in 2021 and 22 during or within 1 year of pregnancy. The two committees that reviewed the deaths determined 94 to be related to pregnancy. This is an increase from past data, which have been published in 2 to 3 year increments since 2015. Each maternal death represents far more than a statistic. It is a profound and often preventable loss that leaves lasting emotional, social, and economic scars on families, communities, and society, the report stated. Beyond the immediate tragedy, each loss signals a broader failure to provide equitable, comprehensive, and culturally competent maternal care. Of the pregnancy-related deaths that occurred in 21 and 22, the committees found 91% could have been prevented. As in past years, substance use disorder remained the most common cause of pregnancy-related death, accounting for nearly a third of the deaths in the recent data. Other leading causes included blood clots and COVID-19, which rose in prevalence as the cause of death in 12% and 11% of deaths, respectively. Deaths due to hemorrhage or postpartum bleeding doubled to 10% from 5% in the previous period. Black Illinoisans had the highest rate of maternal mortality at 78 deaths per 100,000 live births. The report found discrimination was present in 74% of the deaths related to black pregnancies, making it the most common contributing factor in black pregnancy-related deaths. In August, Governor J.B. Pritzker signed House Bill 2517, requiring obstetric care providers to take anti-bias training. The course was designed to educate maternal health care providers on historic racial discrepancies to reduce implicit biases and improve health outcomes. Black mothers were more than twice as likely as white mothers to die from any pregnancy-related cause, including substance use disorder or mental health conditions, but more than three times as likely to die from purely medical pregnancy-related conditions. Obesity was the second most common contributing factor for black maternal deaths, followed by mental health conditions and substance use disorder. Mental health conditions can include postpartum depression, in which individuals may develop feelings of suicidal ideation or wanting to self-harm after pregnancy. Substance use disorder results in a pattern of uncontrolled use of drugs, medication, or inhalants that poorly affects an individual's ability to function, including failure to meet obligations at school, work, or home. Mental health conditions were the most common contributing factor for white and Hispanic pregnancy-related deaths. Discrimination was also a factor in nearly a third of deaths for Hispanic maternal deaths, while substance use disorder was only present in 9% of deaths for that population. For the complete article, please see the in-print version of the Decatur Herald and Review for Wednesday, January 14th. Continuing now with local news from Springfield, Ben Zielinski, Capital News, Illinois. Darren Bailey proposes Illinois DOGE. We're not going in with a chainsaw, GOP candidate says. President Donald Trump and Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency disbanded less than a year into Trump's second term and appeared to have caused more chaos than actual savings to the federal government. But Illinois Republican candidate for Governor Darren Bailey says a DOGE-like system can achieve savings and efficiencies in Illinois' budget. It needs to be broken down, Bailey told reporters of a news conference Thursday, January 8th, at the State House in Springfield. It needs to be audited. It needs to be opened up so that people know where the money's coming from. I am very confident there are going to be a lot of waste discovery in that. Bailey also announced a plan to address cost of living issues and other areas that relies on DOGE-style governing to achieve results. The commissioner, or the commission, under a Bailey governorship would be led by his running mate, Aaron Del Mar. Bailey and Del Mar did not specify any cuts they've already identified, but stressed it would not be a tool to lay off large numbers of state employees or make cuts based on partisan politics, a difference from Trump's and Musk's approach. We're not going in here with a chainsaw, Del Mar said. We're going in here with an X-Acto knife. We are doing this as a purely public policy effort. This is not politically driven. Musk waved a chainsaw on stage at conservative events last year, symbolizing his wide-ranging approach to government cuts. He later had a falling out with Trump and left government service. Bailey and Del Mar suggested numerous state boards and commissions deserve more scrutiny, and any jobs or services that are duplicative could be consolidated. A spokesperson for Governor J.B. Pritzker said he doesn't trust the Bailey campaign's approach. He echoes Trump's lies, copies Trump's dangerous ideas, and wants to bring Trump's chaos to Illinois, Alex Goff said in an email. Make no mistake, Bailey is running with Trump, embracing the same dysfunction and broken promises that have repeatedly failed working families. Bailey said he is not concerned about naming something DOGE after the scrutiny the program received in the Trump administration. People understand what it means, Bailey said. They're going to have to get over the federal situation, and we're going to understand we have our own problems in Illinois. I am my own person, and I have proven that, regardless of who I like, who I support. Beyond the DOGE plan, the former state legislator from Clay County is proposing a series of initiatives he hopes will address affordability. Topping that list is utility prices, which have increased substantially throughout the state. Bailey said he would repeal the 2021 Climate and Equitable Jobs Act that many Republicans blame for rising prices and dwindling supply. He also wants to require independent audits of major utility contracts. Bailey said he would cap annual property tax rates to not exceed a person's mortgage rate. In response, he said that the state would do more to fund education, but did not elaborate on how much he would increase spending for public schools to help them rely less on property taxes. Classrooms should focus on education, not political agendas, Del Mar said. The blueprint prioritizes strong instruction in reading, writing, math, science, and civics. It supports parental involvement. The Trump administration has already tried slashing some spending in Illinois. Most recently last week, the federal government cut off what Pritzker's office estimates is $1 billion in federal aid for child care and other family assistance programs to Illinois. The Trump administration claimed without evidence that the freeze was in response to widespread fraud and misuse of taxpayer dollars in Illinois and four other Democrat-led states. I think it's fair for any administration to demand accountability, Bailey said when asked whether he agrees with the administration's decision. One of Bailey's opponents, conservative researcher Ted Dabrowski, is also trying to score political points on the Trump administration's claims and a fraud scandal in Minnesota's human services programs. Dabrowski held a news conference in Chicago on Tuesday, January 6th, warning massive spending on child care programs in Illinois could be a sign of fraud like Minnesota. But he acknowledged he had no evidence that there had been any wrongdoing in Illinois. He suggested there should be audits to see why child care spending has grown in Illinois in recent years. Funding child care and preschool programs throughout Illinois has been one of Pritzker's top priorities during his second term, and he has included several spending increases for the programs in recent budgets. He took office in the wake of a historic two-year budget impasse between Republican Governor Bruce Rauner and Democrats in the General Assembly that was accompanied by massive spending cuts to social services. Now from local public safety, prescribed burn scheduled by Lake Decatur. Weather permitting, the city of Decatur is planning a prescribed burn this week along Lake Decatur's Basin 4, across from the Disabled American Veterans Club. The prescribed burn is a land management tool that will be conducted by trained and experienced professionals. It is designed to decrease invasive species and to encourage the growth of native plants on the city-owned land. In a news release, the city said care will be taken to ensure safety and minimize smoke from blowing towards homes, roadways, or other smoke-sensitive areas. There are no hazardous materials at this site, and citizens should not be concerned. Local authorities and fire officials have been notified the burn will be taking place. Early morning fire under investigation in Decatur. The cause of an early Tuesday morning fire in a vacant Decatur home is under investigation. According to a news release, the Decatur Fire Department responded to a report of smoke coming from a residence in the 1200 block of East Prairie Street. Firefighters arrived to find smoke coming from all levels of a 2.5-story home. The news release said firefighters deployed 2 attack lines and quickly brought the fire under control, while additional crews conducted primary searches to confirm that no occupants were inside. The home was vacant and did not have an active utility service connected. The department's Fire Investigation Bureau is leading the investigation. From Decatur, the City of Decatur and the Metro Decatur Black Chamber of Commerce have announced events to honor the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Most of the events are set to take place in the days leading up to the Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Day holiday on Monday, January 19th. An art exhibit will be held at 6 p.m. Thursday, January 15th at Gallery 37, 3777 North Woodford Street, Unit C, Decatur. The art show will feature work from Decatur Public High School students. The City of Decatur and the Metro Decatur Black Chamber of Commerce have announced other events to honor the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. The annual MLK March is set to kick off at 10 a.m. Saturday, January 17th. It begins in Mueller Park and will end at the Decatur Civic Center. The march will be led by the Reverend Courtney Carson. The Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Gala will be at 7 p.m. Sunday, January 18th, at the Mount Zion Convention Center. Keynote speaker is State Representative Will Davis. Tickets cost $75 and are available online or through the Metro Decatur Black Chamber of Commerce Facebook page. A non-denominational church service will be at 6 p.m. Monday, January 19th, at the Cultural Arts Center, 321 East Leafland Avenue, Decatur. The service will be led by Bishop James Wills. Keynote speaker is Reverend Byron Hansbrough, pastor of the Greater Mount Olive Baptist Church in Decatur. The Christian trio Cain has been added to the Devon Lakeshore Amphitheater's list of 26 summer concerts. The band, along with special guest band Reeves, will be on stage August 8th at the Nelson Park venue. Tickets ranging from $32 to $59 will be available beginning at 10 a.m. Friday, January 16th at devonamphitheater.com. Cain has had hits with songs such as Rise Up, Lazarus, and Yes, He Can, as well as their viral single, I'm So Blessed. Their newest single, I Made It, was released in 2025. For more information and to learn about more upcoming acts, visit the Devon Lakeshore Amphitheater website at devonamphitheater.com. From our food page, we have Feast of Flavors. Weeknight chicken taco dinner is budget-friendly and easy to make. We also have recipes for an elote salad, a corn dish, flour tortillas, and flan for two. From Gretchen McKay, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I took advantage of what I found on sale in the produce section, a 1-pound container of golf ball-sized cherry tomatoes from Mexico for $1.50, a huge bunch of cilantro for 99 cents, and a bag of 10 Mineola oranges, Tangelos, for $2.50. Chicken was the most expensive thing on my shopping list, but at $3.79 a pound for thighs, it broke down to $1.90 per serving. This menu assumes 3 tacos per eater, so if you have a smaller appetite, you might get lunch the next day from the leftovers. Best of all, it shows that it's possible to get a good dinner on the table on a tight budget. Please see the in-print edition of the Decatur Herald and Review for the complete recipes. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Wednesday, January 14th. Please stay tuned.